Hello, my friend, and welcome to Something for Everybody. My name is Aaron Mashbitz, and Edit B. Kiss joins the podcast this week. And Edit is a professionally trained Reiki master, sec ham healer, karma yogi practitioner, and NLP practitioner. And in this podcast, we talk about meditation, mindfulness, healing from trauma. We talk about eating well, moving well. We talk about fasting. We talk about tips to be more healthy. And we end this conversation on a beautiful idea about gratitude. I really enjoyed this conversation with Edit, and I hope you do as well. In other news, this podcast is brought to you by Amare. Amare is the mental wellness company, and I use their products every single day. So go ahead and click the link in the show notes, scroll through all of their products, and see which ones might work best for you and your wellness needs. Then once you get to checkout, use code EVERYBODY for $10 off your entire order. Now, on to episode 233 of Something for Everybody with Edit B. Kiss. Hello, my friend, and welcome to Something for Everybody. My name is Aaron Mashbitz. Edit, welcome to the show.
Hi, Aaron. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. And before we get into all the good stuff, I have a super important question to ask you, and hopefully you feel like answering it honestly, but how are you doing? Like, actually, really, how are you doing?
I'm excited and I'm doing great. Thank you.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Excited about what? This conversation or life in general?
Oh, both. I mean, this is part of life. So, right. So yes, about life as well and this conversation as well. Yeah. I love to be challenged, and I know every time I sit with someone on an interview is always a new challenge because it's a new person who I'm interacting.
Yeah, it's a very cool perspective. I like that. So the first thing I wanted to talk to you about was what you think most people are getting wrong when it comes to healing their traumas.
They believe that time can heal, that if they just sit with it for a long time or if they wait, it's just going to go away. That's one of the beliefs they have. Or they think that they don't have trauma if they don't have a memory of a traumatized incident, right? That's another misconception. And the other thing could be that they believe that it's only causing mental issues, a trauma. And might, if they just take some pills or if they just chill, then it's going to be soft. These kind of things.
Yeah, I think that the time one is an interesting one because there's like a little bit of truth to that, right? Like as you get farther removed from the situation that really hurt you, you're going to feel a little like slightly better. Obviously, you're not going to completely get healed from it if you don't actually think about it, address it, you know, work through it. But time does like give you a little bit of distance. So there's like a hint of truth to that, right? Not a lot. You still have to like do the work. And then in regards to feeling it in your body, like, man, that's where it lives. You know, you're going to, you know, your right knee hurts maybe, or like you have, you know, trouble walking up the stairs, or it could be in relationship to how you feel about food, which could be back in relationship to how you feel about the thing that happened to you. And so for me, it all seems to be super interconnected. Is that how you feel?
Yes, absolutely. And you said about the time that it seems that the time heals, but actually it makes it worse because it's getting deeper and stronger and is attracting more triggers. And the triggers, which is actually eventually causing physical illnesses and diseases later. So until the trauma is present, buried in the unconscious mind, you're going to get triggered all the time. And these triggers is going to get just make your situation worse, basically.
Got it. So if those are the things that people are getting wrong, what are you trying to get right when you're working with your clients on healing some type of trauma, whether childhood or not?
So make the awareness that when you experience triggers on a daily basis, you are on an emotional roller coaster. That's a sign that you have trauma and you need to heal those and release those before it becomes serious, like mental illness or physical illness. That's what I tell them all the time. And I'm very happy when some people comes to me in their 20s, you know, and then they just have some mental issues and they already want to work on their traumas. I'm so excited about it because then I know that I actually help them to prevent diseases, you know, in the later stage. And of course, when they come to me with physical illness, we actually, that's what we address. We tune into like what emotions is actually coming up related to this physical illness. And that helps us to connect with the unconscious mind to the trauma, to the memory, and able to release it. So other thing I also do with my clients is the mindfulness part, because although we work on the trauma, we releasing the trauma, you are still your worst enemy, your thoughts, still the thought patterns still create, you know, anxiety and stress, and it can still bring you back to the old pattern. Although the situation is resolved or released, they might think waking up in the morning, what if it comes back? What if it's this and this? So whenever I do healing with clients, I also need to tell them to start doing affirmations, reprogram their subconscious mind to make sure that they have positive thoughts and not ruining back what we healed, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, the mindfulness is a big part of that, because like you want to be able to stop those negative thoughts in their track, be able to recognize that and try to, you know, breathe through it and maybe reframe it in some sort of positive way. How do you go about maybe teaching mindfulness or meditation, or what sort of breathing practices are you using for that? How do you get really specific with your clients on how to work through those things?
Yeah, so sometimes I experience that they come to me with depression, you know, and then it's like so hard for them to actually, as you said, reframe or to start thinking positive when they are in like deep in the rabbit hole. So basically, I already recommend them to start doing daily practice on the Transcendental Meditation, which I have on also my YouTube channel for free. So if somebody wants to check it out, it's called Magical Karma Priestess. So you can find a playlist there for meditation. So basically in the Transcendental Meditation, you transcend into the subconscious mind where it's always quiet. So most of the meditations, when you start like a beginner, they say, okay, focus on your breathing and just be, and just, you know, use your five senses, or just be in that present moment. But that's actually helping you to quiet your monkey mind. But when you transcend into the subconscious, you don't need to force yourself to quiet there anything, because it's always quiet. It's like going underwater. And the other good thing about it, that you get into delta brainwaves and you start to produce more of the melatonin, serotonin, oxytocin, and growth hormone. And this allow you to become a more focused and a kinder person, more loving person, and also have a better sleep and better mood and even a more vital body just practicing this meditation. So when people start practicing it daily, it helps them to be in gratitude. It helps them to actually be in more positive thoughts.
Yeah, I can personally attest to that. I've found meditation and mindfulness to be extremely powerful, especially for the athletes that I work with. You know, thinking about in a sports domain, because that's really what I relate everything to, because that's my experience. So forgive me if that's not of interest, but like say you're in the midst of a sports game, right? And something happens, adverse event, something bad, you strike out, fans are booing at you, you know, whatever the case may be, it's easy to relate that to life, because, you know, things are going to happen in your life. There's going to be obstacles and challenges. You're going to fall down. You're going to get rejected from your job. You're going to get fired. You know, your heart's going to get broken, all of these normal things. So how do we respond to those situations? Well, as we know, we always have control over our response. And the way we control our response is by being able to breathe. So a lot of people, I think for me, in my experience, get caught up with meditation because they don't see the real life application. They're like, so Aaron, edit, you just want me to like sit down in my room for 15 minutes, 5 minutes, and just like breathe? How is that going to make my life any better? Well, then when the thing actually happens that is uncomfortable, that is hard, you're able to use that skill of mindfulness or meditation in real life time. Like your boss yelled at you at work. Now you have like 4 minutes before you have to be on another call, and this call could potentially change the trajectory of your life. It's a huge sales call, okay? What if you utilized your mindfulness practice there for 3 minutes to get yourself back centered, to get your mind calm again, to breathe, to be present. If you didn't, you would take those 3 minutes and be like, fuck, that call sucked. Holy shit, what am I going to do? This is terrible. My boss just yelled at me. Fuck. Wow. Okay, great. Like, all of that could happen. And you could still crush the call. Like, maybe that's how you work. But you're more likely to have a really good call if you're taking a few deep breaths. I'm okay. It's going to be okay. I'm ready for this call. I'm going to like all of that stuff. So for me, trying to explain the real life application in moment to moment of mindfulness or meditation, like, seems to allow people to buy into it more. Now, if they're working for you, they're obviously there for a reason, right? They're trying to get through their trauma or some sort of trigger. They're trying to be more resilient or get more success, whatever the case may be. So they probably see the real life application. But just like an everyday person who thinks, oh, maybe I should do this skill, maybe I should try this skill and put it in my toolbox, I think that's a powerful reason why you might want to start.
Yes, exactly. You completely explained it perfectly. So basically, you get more resilient. You become more resilient and you respond instead of reacting. And it's actually saving your life on a long term, because the reactions are the negative emotions which bring your vibration down. So you're going to be in a low vibration if you actually reacting with negative emotions. And it's actually affecting your physical body as well, like getting sicknesses and all of those things like anger and all of those negative emotions can be a starting point for cancer or heart disease and all of those things. So it has a long-term effect, like how you actually react or respond in those situations.
Yeah, so it's so powerful. Excuse me. So powerful how you respond, because that really determines everything moving forward. It determines your trajectory, how you're going to continue to spiral up, how you respond to situations. Extremely powerful. And you've mentioned now a couple times conscious, subconscious, and unconscious. Maybe just for clarification, what are the differences between those three things?
Yeah, so basically in 5% of the time you are in your conscious mind. The conscious mind, you use it when you're focusing on something, you're analyzing, you set goals. That's when you use your conscious mind. And then when you are actually paying attention for your five senses, you are in the present moment. You are in subconscious mind like 45% of the time, which means like you are in autopilot, because you do things so often, so many times, that your body switch into autopilot and then you just do things from subconscious. And that's why is when your subconscious beliefs and habits are not aligned with your conscious decision, that when you can self-sabotage yourself, basically. That's why people start doing subconscious reprogramming, to make it aligned with their conscious decision, with their goals. And then the unconscious is a part of the subconscious where the traumas reside, and basically the guilt and shame and abuse, all of this is in the unconscious mind. And to actually address the unconscious mind, to reach the unconscious mind or what is there, you need to get into that brain waves to actually reach that, to release it properly. And then there is also the superconscious mind, which is we are all in together. And also it includes many layers, our ancestors, our soul family, and our connection to the source.
How do we prevent ourselves from being on autopilot all the time, especially if that autopilot is not helping us? Like, there's some habits that I do that are automatic, that I like, right? I wake up in the morning, I make my bed, I brush my teeth, and I wash my face. That's automatic. That's autopilot. But I've trained myself to do that. Like, so I guess my question about this is really about habit formation. How do you think about removing or deleting some of those unhealthy autopilot habits and then reinstalling some good ones that are actually beneficial for your life, like a movement routine or eating practice or whatever the case may be?
Yeah, so basically you talked about the morning routines or some routines which are beneficial for you, and then like good habits. And yeah, you can also actually change those a bit or tweak a bit to be more in the conscious way, which is like maybe doing it a bit differently every day, or driving to your work on a different road, not always taking the same road, or trying new recipes when you are cooking. Then you need to be more focused what you are cooking, you know. So there are certain things when you can actually use your conscious mind more often. But what is, for example, about habits? So habits are in the subconscious mind, and then you get your habits like before you were 7 years old and from your environment, from your family members. That's how you actually invoked or like get into some habits from your parents and so on and so forth. So how to actually get rid of the bad habits is to have the awareness, okay, which are the habits which self-sabotaging me? For example, I want to go to sleep earlier, or I want to have a better sleep, so I shouldn't watch TV before I go to sleep. So the first thing which I would do is like, what physical things I can do to make it actually more difficult for myself to do that habit. For example, take the TV out of your bedroom. Or if you don't want to smoke, then don't buy cigarettes, you know. Or if you don't want to eat chocolates, then instead of buying, going to the store, shopping and pouring everything into your basket as you used to, maybe order food from home and make sure what is on the list, you know. So be more conscious when you actually start implementing the new habit or getting rid of the old habit. And don't do like many at the same time. Just start with one at a time, because otherwise you feel like a failure when you, you know, can't do it all. So basically just start with one habit, do it for like, some people say 21 days. I always recommend 90 days to make it sure that it's stick with you. And then how to choose a positive habit is like to see the people who already have what you want to have, you know, or the health, the success or whatever, and see their habits and basically pick from there, or how you want to have a healthy body, or if you want to be more successful certain area, and start implementing those habits. But always check on with yourself, like, is it aligned also with your lifestyle and with your, because we are all different, you know. So some, maybe some habits are good for some people, but maybe it's not good for you. So it's not that important to copy every or other people, but you can get some inspiration from others, basically. And then to get rid of old habits, again, you can have a accountability partner to help you with that as well. And I also recommend to actually just be disciplined and consequence, like how you act on it. And yeah, be disciplined and mindful.
Listen, Edit, I'm not taking the TV out of my room, so that's just not going to happen. I need it in there, okay? Have to have it. But that's really good. That's really good. Like, it all seems to, in terms of behavior change, it all seems to boil down for me to awareness, right? You have to have this sense of awareness that something needs to change. Like, for some reason, if you're like delusional, where you think everything is like sunshine and rainbows all the time and all is perfect, like even someone me, I consider myself to live like a really good life. Nothing is perfect. Like, there's tons of stuff I could change and I could do better. So there's a recognition of that. There has to be an awareness of like, okay, this needs a little tweak. Like, I'm feeling this in my gut. My intuition is sort of telling me that, like, yeah, I could use this change right here. And I always say that the number one way to improve your life is to stop doing things that make you feel like shit. So I that's a good starting point, right? Like, you know, this thing makes you feel like crap. Like, try and stop doing it. But what's important is that you replace it with something else, because you're anchoring it to a pre-existing routine. So it's a little bit easier to sort of stick to it. And one of the most important points that you mentioned was like, you got to start with one thing. You got to start small and you got to build up from there. Because we're in February right now. So that means a ton of people probably started their workout journeys in January, which is great. Awesome. Like, a lot of love to you. Please stick with it. But like, for those people who've never worked out right in their whole life, they're saying, okay, I read on the internet that I got to go to the gym 60 minutes a day, 5 days a week. If you've never worked out, that's like a lot of exercise, 5 days a week for 60 minutes. Why not start with something that's too small to fail? Like, okay, I'm going to do one jumping jack or one push-up 1 day a week. Like, literally everyone can do that. And you do it and you track it off. You're like, okay, I did it. Okay, week two, maybe I'll do two jumping jacks. Maybe I'll do week three, because you see a long-term vision of your life. Not just, okay, I got to be in shape in 2 weeks. No, I see, okay, I can be in shape 4 years from now, which makes the rest 60 years or 30 years of my life that much better. And I think if we can have that vision of a long-term future, then we're willing to sort of go through the small micro steps to create the habit that could potentially change our lives. And then once we do that one thing, wow, we have so much now willpower to do anything. All right, I started this workout routine. Okay, now I can eat a little better, or now I can, you know, learn how to communicate better, listen better, or whatever the or meditate or journal or whatever the practice might be. And so drilling it down to the smallest part where it almost seems embarrassing. Like, say you got to clean your room, Jordan Peterson style. Okay, well, I'm going to put one sock away today. Not all of my clothes, but like literally one sock is going to go into the drawer. And no one else has to know. It's not for anyone else. But that's you. You accomplished that thing. And then you build from there. And now your room is clean. Your bed is made. You're going to the gym constantly. You're eating better. All over this like 6-7 year period, because you gave yourself that amount of time to actually change your life. You didn't give yourself, I got to be the best version of myself next week. Here we go. I got 7 days. Like, some stuff you can do on a sprint. And I know we're going to talk about some stuff that you do that can be quick. But for other stuff, it's a lifelong path, because you want to be your best self on the most consistent basis. And so for me, that's how I think about it.
I love that you actually mentioned this, because I used to go to gym, and when I started to go to gym for the first time, like many years ago, in 3 months, I already seen the difference on my body, like how it changed from going to the gym. But I was going like 3 times a week. And then I had a big gap for recently, and then I started to go again like in September. And I went with a trainer, because I didn't want to make mistakes, you know, I wanted to make sure that someone is helping me. And the trainer said, oh, it's okay to go only 2 or 3 times a week. That's fine for you. You don't want to be like big and, you know, you just want to be lean and, you know, strong. And what I recognized already after a couple of months, that I really got stronger, and my daughter is growing, you know, and then she's now my size. And then I couldn't lift her up for many years, because she was like 30, 40 kilos, you know. But now I am actually able to lift her up, and she's my size. And I was so happy about it, you know. And then she just had an accident recently, and then I had to lift her up. And I had no doubts when I approached her to lift her up that I cannot, because I knew I can. So just to inspire people to go to the gym, like, you might be much stronger and more powerful and just feeling much better about yourself if you start going to the gym. And then other thing I changed is I started intermittent fasting. And I was always...
Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, I started also around September, but it was kind of like accidentally, because I always believed if I wake up in the morning, I have to eat. I always like, okay, I'm waking up first thing in the morning, having breakfast. And then, but I was always curious about, what if I don't eat till 11, you know, and then I actually stop eating at 6 p.m. So that would be an amazing. And one morning, I was just very busy. I had calls, I had sessions, I had to work, and then I forgot to eat. So completely forgot to eat till 11. I was like, oh my God, it's 11. I am going to have breakfast now. And I was like, yeah, I can do this. So let's do it tomorrow again. So basically, I started to push myself to do it every morning, having breakfast like 10, 11. And at 6 p.m., I decided, okay, I'm not going to eat after 6 p.m. I mean, like, sometimes I was craving like at 9 p.m. to have some crunches when I was watching a movie or something, but no, I was like stopping myself, like, I'm not eating after 6 p.m. And then I started to do this, and actually the most thing was bothering on my body was my belly. So I was kind of lean all around, but my body was like a bit, you know, fluffy, and then my belly part. And then basically with the intermittent fasting, I got flat, like, wow, like very fast. And then I keep it that way. So it's really powerful. It's really great. And I just feel more energized. I feel much better in my body. And I think it's enough to eat from 10 till 6 p.m., 10 a.m. till 6 p.m.
Absolutely. Yeah. I intermittent fasting is great. Having a feeding window is really, really, really important. How was your like mental clarity in the mornings when you weren't eating yet? Did you feel more clear?
I don't feel any different. I don't feel any different. No, I'm good.
Yeah. Cause I've been trying to like test that out. Like, about my eating window, like before, after I do a podcast, just so I can be really clear. And you saw me eating like a protein bar because it's the morning, and I just took some of my vitamins, and they make my stomach feel weird if I don't eat with them. But that to me is like not eating. That's like so little. I'm like a 230-pound guy, so like that's like not really any food. So, but I've been trying to like sometimes I feel if I don't eat for a long period of time and I just have like some water, I feel like really clear and really sharp. But if I eat like a substantial meal, like right before, I feel like it hasn't settled yet and I don't have enough clarity and like I'm a little foggy. So I like to eat at least maybe a couple hours before I do something where I need to be engaged and really present, or I'll have like a little snack that doesn't bother me, but it still keeps me sharp. It's just something that I've been trying to figure out. Cause I also thought about it as an athlete too. And when my kids should eat before the game, but most of them are like aged 9 to 15. So they can do whatever and they feel fine still. That, I try to have them not eat, 17 fried chicken nuggets before they come play, but that's a different conversation for the parents for another day. But anyway, so yeah, I just wanted to know like maybe what you thought about how your mental clarity was, but I guess you feel sharp. It's like a little different for me. I feel not, it's not like a crazy difference, but I do feel like a little bit different from like when I eat, how I eat, and the timing of it before I do something that's like important to me.
Yeah, usually I start in the morning with meditation, with yoga, so I don't really use my mind. So that's why I probably don't see the difference.
Yeah. Is there anything else you do in the morning when you wake up that you found beneficial?
I take my vitamins. So I start with that too. First thing what I ask from my clients when they come to me is like, what is your diet? What do you eat? Are you taking any vitamins, nutrients, or minerals or something? Because sometimes when they have severe anxiety or stress or, panic attacks, it's because they are low on iron or magnesium or B vitamin, and even just starting to put on more of those, then that's going to be already beneficial for them, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, the nutrition part, it's huge. Like it impacts everything. And the point you made about not buying some of that stuff at the store, like there's this idea about willpower, and it's like you want to buy your willpower at the store because willpower is finite. It'll go away. If you have to use it all the time, like every time you have a meal, you want something sugary. Well, if all the sugary stuff is already in your house, you're going to be able to say no to it like once or twice, but then your willpower is going to run out and then you're going to eat it. So like you're saying, I go to the store. Okay, I know I really like to eat this thing, but I'm not going to buy it. So it's not in my house. So there's more friction and there's more, like there's harder things for me to do to go get it. I have to get in my car. I have to drive to the store. I have to get back in my car. I have to drive home and then I might eat it. And so at late at night, you're most likely not going to do that. So buying your willpower at the store is really good. But nutrition is everything. Like it impacts just your brain, your gut, your body, how you move, how you think, how you sleep. It's definitely a foundational pillar. Are there any other really important tips or ways to live a healthy life for you outside of eating?
Yeah, I mean, I just still want to add, like, I have a very special diet. Actually, I don't eat gluten. I don't eat dairy products like milk products. I don't drink alcohol and I don't eat anything which includes processed sugar, basically. So I eliminated all of those like in 2016 and it's helped me. Wow. It's even helped me to drop 20 kilos. I was 73 and then I dropped to 53 kilos. So I'm now is like around 120 something in pounds. So just because of the diet.
Was that something you did? You wanted to lose that weight on purpose? Or that just sort of happened as you started to get more clear?
I'm going to be very woo-woo here. So I'm a spiritual mentor as well. So I'm a Reiki master, karma yogi, and Shechem healer. So basically, I was healing myself with the most powerful Reiki science. I was a Reiki master. I just became a Reiki master at that time. And one day I woke up and I just was a reprogramming, complete reprogramming. So I couldn't eat those food anymore, basically. So I'm very lucky. I don't have cravings. If I know that food contains certain of those ingredients, I don't eat it. It's just, for me, it's like looking the food, like, those soaps, which smells like chocolate. And you would think like, oh, I would bite in that, but it's a soap. So it's not for food. So that's how I feel about it. Yeah, so that's how I feel about a donut. Looking at the donut, for me, is not food anymore, So I got kind of a reprogramming. So I actually encourage clients to do a lot of meditations, connecting with their higher self, raise their vibration, basically, because as you raise your vibration, your body is stopping you to eat low vibrational food and you won't crave it anymore.
Yeah, it's the same sort of thing for the people that you hang around. If you're around folks who just drain your energy all the time, at some point you're going to sort of energetically move past them in a sense, and you'll be like, why would I keep spending time with these people? All they do is like complain. They make me feel tired. They want to live in the past. They don't have any goals for the future. They're not lifting me up. It's the same thing about food or anything else that starts to bring you down as you start to raise yourself up. And I think that's very important to note to people that sometimes you're going to have to let those things go as you continue to elevate yourself spiritually, energetically, emotionally, physically. There's going to be things that you do have to let go because other people are uncomfortable seeing you transition into a higher phase of your life because they haven't yet made that choice. And so they're trying to bring you back down to them to stay at this sort of comfortable level. And it can get lonely at times because you might be doing the work by yourself. But it all transitions into something powerful. And then the people that you do meet who are on the same plane as you, man, those relationships can be much deeper and powerful and energy giving and revitalizing and things like that.
Yes, you were just talking about the spiritual awakening. When people are going through the spiritual awakening, basically in the cocoon phase, and they actually realize that their environment is disagreeing with them, misunderstand them, don't know why they are acting so weird or why they don't want to be in the same place or they don't want to go with them to the pub anymore or, so on and so forth. So it's to set boundaries, to actually start living more with the self-care and self-realization. Yeah.
When was your spiritual awakening, Edit?
I think it was in stages. So the first was probably when I had my panic attacks in the beginning of my 20s, when I started to do the Reiki healings. And then I started to do family constellation therapies and so on and so forth. So that was, I think, the beginning of it. But I was still working as an engineer parallel to that. And then the biggest awakening was when I actually learned about karma yoga and the source memory healing, the trauma healing, and the transcendental meditation. That's when my third eye opened and I started to have breadcrumbs from the universe, new intuitions, and just seeing my past, my future in a different way. And that's when I decided to be a healer or basically a mentor. And that was in 2018.
Where did the panic attacks come from? Was that something you've ever experienced before or they were brand new or what was going on there?
Yeah, so basically I didn't know at the beginning that what I'm experiencing is panic attacks. I just felt like nervous, anxious. I felt like chest pain. I thought I'm having a heart attack, but why would you have a heart attack when you are 20, right? So it happened to me in Mexico when I was traveling. So I love traveling. And then usually I used to travel alone. And I also been a hypochondriac. So it wasn't a good plan traveling alone when you're a hypochondriac. So I was making, elephants from ants. And that's how it's started my panic attacks. And then it took me a couple of months to actually identify that, what I'm having is actually panic attacks. And then it stayed with me for a decade, so coming back to me like every 2 or 3 times a year, basically calling the ambulance for no reason. So so basically, and I was like I was doing this Reiki, and then it helped me managing it, but it did not help to stop it. And then with the karma yoga, with the source memory healing, trauma healing, and transcendental meditation is which actually eventually helped me to stop and take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What's karmic yoga? You've mentioned that a couple times.
Yeah, it's karma yoga healing is actually a 60,000 years old technique. It's initiated from Adi Yogi Shiva. So basically, it helps you to heal from your past life karmas. It helps you actually heal from ancestral karmas, ancestral defect, and also trauma. Healing is and this trauma could be in this lifetime or past lives. So it's like healing your whole layers, all your layers to create a better life for yourself. You rewrite the past to create a brand new future.
Had another healer on this podcast and she had a great quote. It was give yourself the childhood that you never had. Basically talking about healing yourself in the current day as an adult to rewire your body to give yourself the childhood that you never had, where you feel like you're loved and supported and cared for, and you see that inner being, that small version of yourself, loved and with light and not with any sort of harboring these traumatic feelings towards that. And I thought that was really cool, because that's basically what the idea is. We're trying to go backwards, see that, heal it, and then so we can have a better path moving forward in our present day and in our future.
Yes, that's called the inner child healing. Yes, many healer use that, the inner child healing. That's actually focusing on childhood trauma or like unhappy childhood, you know, or when you were not experiencing love from your parents. And this kind of like, it's nurturing yourself as a child, basically, during a meditation or so on and so forth. Karma yoga healing is much more going deeper with the sense of past life things, and also not just trauma, but karma and ancestral effect as well. So it's just addressing more layers of your existence, because we are multidimensional beings. We shouldn't forget that.
Okay. So it's a little bit deeper than my brain comprehended at the moment. That's good. Okay. There's one thing that you posted on Instagram. You have a masterclass, or maybe you did, maybe it's still present. I don't know. But the headline said, "Stop your depression in 4 weeks." And I found that very interesting. Can you explain what that's about and how you make that happen?
Yeah, so actually I started to work with my clients, and I used to have 8 weeks programs, and then I realized that they already transform and they already having results in 4 weeks, you know? So I was like, okay, then no, I can have actually 4 weeks programs because it's already happening. So how it goes, we actually, so I have a meditation library. So they tune into the library, they do meditations every day, which is actually, again, addressing all the layers, healing all the layers. And then I also start doing with them the private sessions on the trauma releases. So basically picking up on their current condition, on their current issues, and finding the trauma which is related to it and release it for them. So that's what we do in these 4 weeks. And also I'm giving them, you know, advices about mindfulness, about positive thinking, about nutrition, about whatever they need to actually develop in themselves. And then basically if they do the daily routine with the meditations, they themselves will get into the state as well, where they can channel from their higher self more intuitive guidance, what is the best for themselves as well, and what path to follow. So it's that's why like after 4 weeks, I can even like let them go, because they will be able to guide themselves for a better future. And of course, they've got the meditation library access for a lifetime, so they can continue doing those processes and even the healing themselves.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. One more thing to chat with you about. And you have an upcoming retreat. Can you talk to us about that more and tell me what's going on there? And maybe some people will want to check out some more information.
Yeah, so my retreat is going to happen end of August, 31st of August in Greece, on a beautiful island. And this is like an hour ferry ride from Athens, so it's easy to access. It's a beautiful place with, it's just breathtaking forest with huge trees and like little streams and the ocean, I mean, the Mediterranean Sea is there. So it's just a secluded place. It's really beautiful with very small venues and places. So it's only for 6 people. So it's a very small group of what we're going to have there. And basically, we're going to go through also energy protection. We're going to go through karma healing. We're going to go through trauma healing. We're going to go through manifestations through bending reality in delta brainwave. So we're going to go through this. And then why is it so important to do it in a retreat, not like on a Zoom and being at home? It's basically because you are there and not having the everyday hustle around you. You don't need to like think about your kids or your work or anything. So you can basically just go through these 7 days, raising your vibration and healing constantly. You know, you don't need to like drop whatever is happening. So it's much more deeper and much more effective in that way, that you are away for 7 days and you're doing these healing programs. And it's basically not taking your whole day, it's a couple of hours a day, and the rest of the day you can actually use it with swimming. And we also have Qigong and meditation in the evening. So it's a very relaxed space, but also very powerful because of the modalities we do.
Wow, sounds amazing. Yeah, sounds awesome. Well, one more thing, I guess. I said that was the last thing, but one more thing. Let's end on talking about gratitude, because you mentioned that earlier, and that's a really important thing for me, and I'm sure it is for you. So just initial thoughts that come up when you hear the word gratitude and how you practice that in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, so people have all kinds of expectations towards themselves and towards others and towards their environment. And when they're looking at things through that perspective, they always feel like something is not enough good, or something is not fulfilling, or something they need to change. And it's okay to have motivation for change, and it's okay to acknowledge that I want to become better, or I want to change my environment. But in an everyday basis, you should actually get into the state of being blissful or grateful for whatever you have and see the good part of it while you are working towards your dreams or goals. And it's the easiest to do it through gratitude. So just in the morning, like, what are you grateful for? Like, you are grateful for even to be alive, you know, you are healthy, you have your food, you have your shelter, your children are healthy, or, you know, whatever is there, like simple things you can be grateful for. You count your blessings, basically. And then as you count your blessings, you already feel better in within yourself. And then with that, starting the day like that, you can still work on your everyday challenges, you work through your goals and so on and so forth. But having the acknowledgement that, yes, I'm actually starting from a good space, you know, and I'm actually happy about where I am right now, that's very important. And many people is missing that because they're waking up and they already see what is not working. They already see what is not how they want to be. And then they discouraged and they feel maybe all kinds of negative emotions, and is pulling them down again through vibrationally, you know, they are in a low vibration already, which is attract more negative things into their life. So we are attracting energetically who we are. So if we are in gratitude and feel blessed, we are attracting more blessings and we are attracting more positive things to our life. But we are always complaining and always thinking about the half cup empty, then that's what we're gonna get, basically.
Perfect. Beautifully said. Great way to wrap it up. Where can people go if they want more of you, Edit?
So I have a website, which is my name, editbkiss.com. I'm also active on Instagram. It's also editbkiss. I have my YouTube channel, as I mentioned earlier, is the Magical Karma Priestess, where I upload daily. And also I have a playlist there for meditation. And I also have a book for people who's going through spiritual awakening. It's On the Healer's Journey. It's a coaching book for seekers. So if you have issues with how to set boundaries, how to ground yourself, how to feel better about yourself, and how to not getting discouraged about your journey, then this book is for you.
Perfect. All of that is linked below in the show notes. So go check it out. And thank you for your time, your energy, and your gifts, Edit. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Aaron, for having me.
Thank you for tuning into that episode with Edit. What idea stood out to you the most? What idea resonated with you most deeply that you could implement into your life starting right now, today? And if you enjoyed that episode, please share it with a friend, because the podcast grows from people like you sharing it with people like you. And don't forget to leave us a rating or review on Spotify, Apple, or even on Good Pods. But the absolute best way to support this podcast is by becoming a supporter via Patreon. Patreon directly supports me, this podcast, and my mental health nonprofit called You Are Loved. So thank you in advance. I appreciate your support. But most importantly, above all else, please take good care of yourselves and others, and I'll see you next time. Lots of love. Cheers.